Welcome to the Nations Church Belmont podcast. We hope this message blesses you.
All right, I want you to turn in your Bibles, please, to Mark chapter 14. And we're going to read a passage. I love this passage, but I want to invite you to see the scene this morning. This is a passage. We have a great opportunity with this passage because it is an account that we find in all four of the Gospels. I'm going to be reading from Mark's account. Honestly, it's a toss-up which is our reference account. I started this morning thinking I was going to read John and then Luke, and I've settled on Mark. So let's read Mark's account. But I want to tell you that there's, because each of the four gospel accounts are written from slightly different perspectives, we have a lot of detail in this account. You can almost, I would like to contend, you can almost see the table and who is seated where. Maybe we'll come to that. Mark 14, I'm reading from verse 1. It says, "Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. Not during the feast, they said, or the people may riot. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper." Who was it? Simon the leper. That's a very unfortunate surname. We'll come to it. "A woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, 'Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages.'" How much? More than a year's wages. Wow. "And the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me." I think the title of this message is something like, "It's a beautiful thing." And I do want to encourage you, you're in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing for the right reason. You have the right passions to place a priority on the house of God. Jesus said, verse 7, "The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." And then it says, "Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money, so he watched for an opportunity to hand him over." I feel like, so I said there's a number of different perspectives that we have access to in this story, and I want to talk about three of those, so I'm going to need three volunteers. I apologize, I probably should have worded you up beforehand, but I'm just going to need three volunteers. I need two guys and one girl, and young people, don't make the older people move. Come on, I need you to just move. Just start. Thank you. That's one. Okay, come and stand up here. That's two. And I need a lady. I'm going to apologize in advance to the guy volunteers. Come and stand over here. One here, one here. And I need a lady. Thank you. You can come and stand over here. All right, thank you. So I want to look at, this is Simon. I'm sorry, what's your name? That's a better name than the one I'm about to give you. This is Judas, but just for now, like, thanks for helping me with this, Harrison. And this is going to be Mary. We find her name in one of the other accounts, but she is the woman. Okay, let's have a look at Simon's perspective for starters. In order to understand Simon's perspective, we need to look at Luke's account. And we also need to interrogate his surname a little bit. Now, as I said, this is a very unfortunate surname that Simon has. He is Simon the leper. And just like we have surnames to designate, you know, it's like Clayton the Coombs, like which Clayton we're talking about. It's not as critical in my case because I don't meet too many other Claytons, but you know the idea, it's like that one. Then they had names or titles to delineate which one we're talking about. So this one, this Simon is Simon the leper. And that is an unfortunate surname. But I'm telling you, there's a testimony here. And there's got to be a testimony, because the setting for this is a feast where Simon the leper is in social company. So just think about what is implied here. Simon the leper, given what we know about leprosy in the Bible and the conventions surrounding leprosy, Simon the leper can only have been Simon, the one that used to be a leper. He must be Simon the healed. He's actually Simon the healed leper. In other words, a miracle has already come to this house. But he has another surname. Matthew and Mark's gospel call him Simon the leper. But Luke's gospel has another surname for him, and we need to ask about that. Because see, in Luke's gospel, we find the additional detail that this is actually Simon's house. He is the host of this feast. And in Luke's gospel, you'll find this in, I didn't give you the references. It will be Mark 14, you'll find it in Matthew 26, if you're one of those Bible flippers, you know, chain reference people. Matthew 26, you need to look. John 12, you need to look. And Luke 7, like right up the front end of the gospels. But in Luke 7, you'll find that a certain Pharisee gave a feast in Jesus' honor. So he's Simon the healed leper, but he's also Simon the Pharisee. And see, for a Pharisee, this story is all about rightly ordered passions. How many know that we can be passionate about right things and we can be passionate about wrong things? Like, being passionate is not a virtue in itself, because we can be passionate about the wrong things. But setting our heart on, pouring out our lives for, being passionate about the right things, that's what this story celebrates. So I want to look at Simon's perspective for a minute, because see, for a Pharisee, Simon wants everything to look right. Like, the question on his mind is, what about them? Like everybody else at the feast, how is this going to look? Simon thinks that he's doing Jesus a favor by inviting him over into the company of other Pharisees. This is a great opportunity for you, Jesus, because, I mean, you're not yet in this circle. You don't yet mix with these people, but I'm going to introduce you to the influencers around here. He's a Pharisee. He thinks the coolest people are other Pharisees. I'm pretty sure only the Pharisees thought that, but he definitely is baptized in this opinion, and he wants to introduce Jesus into this company. Jesus doesn't have a lot of honor or standing in this circle yet, because the text says in Luke's gospel that when he comes in, he doesn't get his feet washed. He doesn't get his head anointed. Apologize for the deck conventions at the time, dusty roads, the anointing of the head thing. I don't actually understand that one, but it's the polite thing to do when you come into a home. You feel refreshed and you feel welcomed if your feet are washed and your head's anointed. Jesus is watching other people come in and being seated at the table and seeing, and everybody sees the really important people get their feet washed, get their head anointed. Jesus comes in, he doesn't get his feet washed, he doesn't get his head anointed. But he does have a place at the table, and he should feel thankful, right? I mean, this is Simon's perspective. Now, so Simon's concerned with how it looks, like the worst thing imaginable for him is what is about to occur, a scene. Because somebody who's uninvited turns up. And not only that, she's a person who has a reputation. And he sees, like, his heart sinks as he sees this woman coming closer and closer to the table. And when she gets maybe a couple of feet away, he knows exactly where she's headed. And he's like, this is the worst. This is the absolute worst. I'm trying to get Jesus, like, recognized in this environment. And now he's going to be associated with this sinful woman. She's got a reputation, everybody knows. And he says in his heart, if this man were a prophet, he's making up his mind about Jesus. If this man were a prophet, he would know. He would know what kind of woman this is. I love it. He raises the question in his heart, and Jesus answers out loud, and he says, Simon, can I tell you a story? Like, there was two debtors. This is in Luke's account. You'll find this in Luke 7. There were two debtors, and one owed 100 denarii, one owed 50 denarii. I love it. He's talking to the Pharisee. He doesn't say one owed a million denarii and one owed five. It's like, you think she's so sinful? We're in the same order of magnitude of sinfulness. But anyway, be that as it may. One owed 100 denarii, one owed 50 denarii. Both got forgiven. Which will love him more? And Simon says, do you see how I did that? And Simon said, never mind. It's just a little joke at Simon's expense. Simon says, I suppose the one who got forgiven more. Jesus says, well done. Yeah, so when I came into your house, I didn't get anybody wash my feet, but she washed my feet with her tears and she wiped them with her hair. Nobody bothered to anoint my head, but she's not stopped kissing my feet from the moment that I entered your place. This is Simon's perspective. There's one other thing that I need you to know about this. And if you're reading the New King James in John 12, it's the only place you'll find this detail in the story. But if you cross-reference John 6:71, I don't see anybody taking notes, so I'm just confusing people at this stage. So you're just going to take my word for it. I can see you're just going to take my word for it. This is Judas Iscariot's father. This is Judas Iscariot's family home. So Judas and his father have invited... Now you're looking at me like deer in the headlights, so you have to look it up. It's like New King James. You've all got the YouVersion app on your phone of John 12 or John 6:71 in any translation will say that Judas Iscariot's father's name was Simon Iscariot. So this is Judas's family home. A miracle has come to Judas's family home. But let's talk about Judas's perspective now. I'm sorry again for calling you Judas. You've got a much better name than that. So Judas, in order to understand his perspective, we need to interrogate the value of the gift. Like, how much was it worth? Because you'll find only in the account that we read does it say that it was worth more than a year's wages. In John's gospel, it says that it was worth a year's wages. In Matthew's gospel, it says it was worth a very large amount. But in John's gospel, it says, in Mark's gospel, it says it was worth more than a year's wages. So, it's worth a year's wages or it's worth more than a year's wages? What's going on here? What's going on here? John's gospel will tell us that Judas got offended not because he cared about the poor. Or this could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor. He gets offended not because he cares about the poor, but because he's keeper of the money bag. And as keeper of the money bag, he would often help himself to what was in it. So let me tell you what's going on here. What he says is, this can be sold for a year's wages. But what he knows in his heart is, this could be sold for more than a year's wages. What's the more? It's his margin. He's got a good heart. Like, he's supporting Jesus' ministry. He's helping out with his gifts. But his father is asking, what about them? Judas is asking, what about me? Like, how does it benefit me? It's got to be win-win. Jesus is going to make money. The ministry's going to prosper. I am also going to make money. The more is Judas's margin. So here's what happens from his perspective. Judas sees Mary approaching, and he's actually thrilled. Like, his father's devastated. The closer she gets, like, the worse of a day this guy is having. Like, this is just the worst case scenario for him. But it's the best case scenario for him because he's seen this before. He's seen people approach Jesus with their gifts. But when they put their gift down at Jesus' feet, Jesus picks it up and gives it to him. Then he can sell it at a profit, put the money in the treasury. Everybody wins. So he's getting happier and happier because he knows. He's already doing the calculations. This is worth more than a year's wages. So when he speaks out his offense, he says, this could have been sold for a year's wages. This could have been sold for more than a year's wages. Wow, I got that wrong. This could have been sold for a year's wages, he says, because he knows the value of the thing. So he's excited the closer that box gets to Jesus until one devastating point. She breaks the box. Like, unscrew the... a flipping cap. If you want to, you know, get an eyedropper and I can still sell it for more than a year's wages. But if you break the box, you waste it. He's thinking of monetizing it, but when she pours it out, and by the way, this is the straw that breaks the camel's back for him. He is utterly offended, and he goes out from this feast and agrees to betray Jesus. This is the last straw for Judas. But I want to talk about her perspective. This is Mary. Her perspective. She's watching, probably from a distance, maybe even from outside the house. There's no reason to invite her. This is, and I love the way we did this before. Let's honor and celebrate the chaos of households and the chaos of parenthood and let's just acknowledge before God and one another that our lives are not perfectly together. Her life is not perfectly together. There has been some disorder in her life, but I tell you what's in the right order, and that is her passions. She's passionate about the right things. She knows that she's been forgiven. He doesn't even know that he's been forgiven. He doesn't know that he needs to be forgiven. But she knows that she's been forgiven. So she's watching what happens. And when Jesus walks in, the thing that nobody else noticed, she noticed. And it broke her, just like she broke the box. Nobody washed his feet. Nobody anointed his head. She alone knows that he's the most important person in the room. She alone knows the power, the majesty, the authority, the beauty. She alone knows, even more so than the disciples who should have known better. She has a sense of what is to come because she knows prophetically. She can see what you and I know now as a matter of history. She can see the cross. And she knows the time is running out to honor him in this way. See, she's saying, Simon's saying, what about them? What will they think? Judas is saying, what about me? How will this benefit me? She has eyes only for one. She's saying, what about him? Why is nobody honoring him? He will be honored. And she pushes through. She forces her way through that crowd. And as she forces her way through that crowd, she's forcing her way through the disapproval and the judgment and the rejection. She pushes back all of that fear because she's got eyes only for one. Commentators will tell us that she's not necessarily a rich woman, but this is a treasure. This is like the one thing that she possesses. And it's saved up for the day of her wedding. You think about that, by the way. I want to preach about mothers today, but I'm actually just preaching about spectacular women. The other two services will be about mothers. This one, we don't even know if she became a mother because she's not remembered for that. She's remembered for having rightly ordered passions. She's remembered for what she did to Jesus. Jesus says, it's a beautiful thing. Simon says, it's an awkward thing. Judas says, it's a terrible thing. It's a wasteful thing. Jesus says, no, it's a beautiful thing. She did what she had. She gave what was in her hand. Jesus said, it was intended. Think about that, by the way. What she's been told all her life is, this is intended for the day of your wedding. Because one day you're going to meet a man. And your future is going to be secure. And you will pour this out on yourself to make yourself acceptable to the man who's going to marry you, like you'll be in his household and you'll be under his protection and your future is going to be secure. So she's saving it up for the day of her wedding. But in this moment, she sees Jesus not being honored, and all of a sudden she comes to this decision. My future, I'm going to stake my entire future on this man. I'm not saying, by the way, that she thinks she's going to marry him. I think she knows that the cross is coming. I think she appreciates and understands who Jesus is. In fact, she's the only one who truly does in that moment. But she's just saying, I'm going to stake my entire future. I'm going to Judas for some reason. See, this is your redemption. You can be Jesus for now. I'm going to stake my entire future on this man. I'm going to pour it all out for him. Why don't we appreciate our volunteers for standing for a really long time and copping horrible names. So I just want to say a couple of things, and our time is nearly done. Maybe we can get the musicians to come. But I just want to say it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And as I drove into this suburb today, I'm from Melbourne. I just put it in my GPS. I don't know what Belmont means. I suspect as I drive in here that I ought to know what Belmont means. Like, it's a nice suburb. Everything's ordered. It's tidy. I don't know about some of you, but it seems like rich people live here. People of means and wealth, people who aspire to live here or get some kind of significance from the fact that they live in a suburb like this. But those sort of people are the sort of people that are at home on a Sunday morning. Because there's things to do. Like, it doesn't make sense. Do you know, I went out to get a coffee this morning. There's one coffee shop within a 5-kilometer radius. I'm sorry, I'm from Melbourne. I'm just doing the Melbourne thing, right? But one coffee shop within a 5-kilometer radius of me that was open at 6 o'clock in the morning. Why? Because you don't do that on Sunday morning. Like, it's just people are in bed. There's people at home going, you know, it's Mother's Day. I'm not even going to go to church today. And I'm not judging them, but I want to celebrate you. I want to just say to every person here, you're right. It's our society. We get told way too much that our society is right and we're wrong. That the way that they think is virtuous and correct, and the way that we think is kind of narrow and mean-spirited or whatever else other names they want to call us. And I just want to tell you, in this house, in this environment today, you're right. We are the ones. You are the ones that get it and the significance of him. We're the ones who say, I don't want to let another Sunday go by. He needs to be honored. His name needs to be lifted up in this suburb. Where in a place particularly, you are a prophetic message to a suburb like this, where complacency reigns and order is worshipped and money is worshipped and people don't want to mess up their lives. And they look at people like us and go, how quaint, how archaic that you would spend a Sunday morning. Some of you are going to be here a couple of services. Some of you may even come back tonight. Why would you pour out your life, spend your Sunday here? Do we have any college students here? I bet, I 100% guarantee you've been subject to this accusation by somebody in your life. Why would you do that? Why would you give a year? Why would you, you know, sow your time for free? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't benefit you. It's embarrassing. And I want to speak to the mother that's here today, where maybe even your own kids have said, come on, Mum, just on one day, it's Mother's Day. Like, let's do a normal thing. Let's do a late brunch or whatever. And you've dug your heels in and you said, no, but I go to church on Sunday. And you can make your choice, but I'm going to be found in the house of God. And I just want to say, you're right. You have the right priorities. You're passionate about the right things. I want to challenge every person here. Pouring out your life, staking your future on Jesus is the right thing to do.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the message. If you want to know more about our campus, you can go to nationschurch.com/au/Belmont.